This is the Great Shalom Broadcast. I'm Sharon Sarles, and today in the studio I have a special guest, Tom Schnorr, who is a compounding pharmacist and a certified clinical nutritionist and the owner of the Apothecary Shop in North Austin. And we'll tell you where that is at the end of the show. You'll want to consult with him, and we're going to talk about ADD and ADHD, especially today, although I know Tom is very experienced in a number of issues. You will want to call your friends right now, and we will take call-ins. And right before we get into talking with Tom, I have a few announcements, because we are embarking this morning on a series of professional guests who are going to come in and give us practical lifestyle tips on how to help our children and our students. And I say I believe in healing. I'll take it any way it comes. And to cooperate with the way life is supposed to be is a great way not to stomp down that healing. But I also want to tell you that starting tomorrow at Brushy Creek Church, Pastor Don Olson is going to begin a series on healing. There's always good Bible teaching there and precious praise, and plenty of people who will pray with you. If you would like to come out, that's at Brushy Creek Church on Anderson Mill between 620 and 183. And I also have some free resources for you that we will tell you at the end of the broadcast. But for now, let's jump in and talk with Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Sunshine. How are you?
I am so blessed. And Tom is one of my favorite people. He is the first guy who helped us as an underwriter here. We are so thankful for that, and I know that he's a very expert in what he does, and he has a great wife. So good morning, Vicki, a kind, wonderful woman who's also one of my favorite people. So we're going to talk about ADD and ADHD, and we hear a lot about it. It seems to me that we have an awful lot of this going on. So, Tom, what is this? What is this really?
Well, in the allopathic medicine, which is the traditional Western world, we'll start with the definition of ADD. And they classify it as someone who's impulsive, inattentive, and maybe hyperactive. That is why the H is there and the H is not there, which causes our confusion. Like, why do we have multiple abbreviations for a same disorder? And so that is the base of what it is. Someone who's impulsive. We'll jump in and answer your question before it ends. It's like we're in the lightning round of the TV game show. We want to be the first to hit the button. We're inattentive. As soon as you start talking for a few minutes, our eyes roll back and we'll start looking out the window and get in trouble in the classroom. You remember us, don't you?
Yes. I like to think of them as teaching challenges.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And that's probably a very fine way to put it to those of us who are. But, we won't get a medical diagnosis and be able to safely give you medication and make a billable event. So we've got to give it a diagnosis and move it from teaching challenge, which I believe it is a very big part of that. And I think that's a better, safer, gentler way to treat our disorder.
Mm-hmm. I think we jump to medicalizing things.
Yes.
An awful lot.
Amen.
And it's very difficult. I'm not sure there are scientific and clear categories as to what is a rambunctious kid or what is a child with a neurological disorder that we're going to label ADD.
That's so true, so true. And in our Western world, we're trying to get our hands around a definitive diagnostic method of saying you have it, you don't, and draw a line here. And we can't. We do think there's things, and we're saying it's a lack of chemical transmitters like dopamine, which brings us peace and calm and that comfort that we all seek. It may be too much norepi, maybe not enough norepi, which is the fight or flight. They're saying it may be receptors that aren't developed yet in the brain that process with both of those chemicals properly. And the other thought is the brain is slow to develop. It's a few years behind the body. It's mm-hmm. a few years behind the kids, and we're still overstimulated. We're like a 6-month-old baby seeing everything anew in a 9, 10-year-old kid, an 8-year-old child who's also have to interact more with the environment and society.
Well, we do have a very stimulating society.
Oh, boy.
And it does seem to me that the children are a little less mature at any given level than they used to be 30 years ago.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And we're just, that's our environment we're working. We're trying and trying and trying. I think we put a lot on our children. We ask them to grow up early. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to. And some of the kids just say, no, I'm not. My brain's not ready to go that far yet.
Mm-hmm. And it seems that there's a difference between the boys and the girls. There are more boys who get labeled ADD, ADHD.
Yes, yes, ma'am. And the, was it 2006 is our last CDC report on learning disabilities and ADHD. Generally, it's thought that 7 to 8% of all children have some level of ADHD combined with their learning disability. But we see that in boys, it's nearly 13%. Mm-hmm. And if we were to differentiate by sex, it's 4 to 5% of the girls and 10 to 12% of the boys. So we see nearly a twofold increase in the boys that they're maybe a little slower developed in managing their brain. Mm-hmm. And that's where Western medicine comes in and says, okay, you know, we stumbled. Interesting history on our drugs. We stumbled into managing the attention deficit disorders when we had children in group homes that were overactive, unattentive, and overweight. And back in the early 60s, they were given amphetamines. Mm-hmm. And amphetamines, they were working on giving the amphetamines to lose weight so they'd be more accepted in society. Mm-hmm. It was the Twiggy years, what can you say? And the children got more attentive and studied and connected with the universe and connected up with the society they were in. And so it was a miracle drug. Mm-hmm. So these children were given amphetamines. We saw dosing was a little high. So they started creating other drugs, and we recreated the Ritalins, mm-hmm. and they started using it a little more. And so they've been used for years, but not as much as they are today. Mm-hmm. They really, really, really took off for the last, say, 20 years. Now we are finally seeing some judicious pullback, mm-hmm. and some what else can we do? Mm-hmm. What more can we do? Is this the only thing we can do?
Well, it seems to me that we did rush headlong, and from an educator's perspective, too easy was it to say, oh, this child is difficult, let's drug them. And I don't think the diagnosis should be done by teachers, and certainly not for adult convenience. Really, it's only a physician who can diagnose this, and a wise physician will take reads from a variety of situations and not just in the one schoolhouse, because some kids just don't do well with sitting down. In fact, I've already opined this morning, the early childhood environment and the early years in elementary school is a very feminized environment. We expect people to sit down, and those boys maybe not ready to sit down for so many hours, and we're going the wrong direction in that, taking away playtime, recess, and PE, all of those things, which are very necessary, and maybe especially so for the males. But so I think we did rush too long, but I think you are telling me there are some situations where the amphetamines are helpful.
And playing pharmacist now for 26 years, I've had to temper my stiffness to the use of strong medications when a light, gentle push would be all we needed. Mm-hmm. I have a personal situation with a dear, dear child who, after everything we used nutritionally, after all the environmental and house changes, it wasn't until a very low dose of one of these medications was used for the last 2 years that just turned her around. And it was a lot of soul searching by her mother, by myself as her godparent, that we, spent a lot of time and energy on it, and it really worked for her. Mm-hmm. I see that that's the way to use it. A lot of times it's easier just to say, here's a pill, go on out, and let's see what happens. Yet we've not changed any of the easier things. I have this belief the body repairs if given the perfect environment, mm-hmm. and that's spiritual, nutritional, social. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a pill. As a clinical nutritionist, my wife always says, Tom, you're just using weaker items instead of your drugs to help people. And I go, yes, ma'am. And couple that with what I always counsel with people, I can't get good nutrition, good food, and good spiritual programs into this pill. This pill, this vitamin is just part of that dance that we have to do to repair the body. And to ignore that process and just say, here's your heavy amphetamine drug and this is going to fix everything, I come away with a feeling it just changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And change is change, sometimes good and sometimes, I would say, over good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have new environment that you have to deal with. And sometimes that's all we get. Our family has to make choices when we are when we come up against this and we see it. Western medicine, and I do think there's some truth to it, that says the brain's not totally developed. We need to make environment safer. What did we do for the small child, the baby, the infant, to help the body develop? We kept the food simple, pure. We wouldn't think of giving them anything processed. It all was from mother's milk to whole grain to whole plants to whole fruits and vegetables. We wouldn't put in anything that we wouldn't put a chemical in that a word we could not pronounce, because we knew their liver was not developed. We know the liver takes 6 months to develop to where it can tolerate many, many of the foods we eat.
Mm-hmm.
I think the brain's the same thing. I don't think the brain totally develops. We need to be more gentle. And I think if we start with foods and if we start with environment, we may be able to keep this disorder at bay.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all about a holistic lifestyle.
Yes,
doing
ma'am.
Things the way God created in the first place, so you don't have an injury that then you have to repair.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. We have found that there's small gene mutations in the brain and in the bodies that give higher prevalence and higher risk factors, but they repair. Most children usually grow out of the disorder. It's 40%.
Well, that's great news.
You know. Yes, ma'am.
And it sounds like you just said that gene problems can repair.
They can repair.
That is a wonderful thing, because so often people say, well, it's genetic, and that means, oh, well, there's, to them, that means, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about it, and that's simply not true.
When I was studying in my undergraduate, it was in genetics, and at that time, genes were genes encoded. We could only change the environment. We couldn't change the genes. Now we know that theory's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
As we mapped the human genome, we know it's flexible.
Mm-hmm.
It bends and it changes. It mutates. It's constantly making good and making, let's say, challenged. It is in this state of flux. Our genes, it expresses differently given the environment it is in, and thank God it does. It's how man can survive the bitter colds of Alaska and the sweltering heats of the Sahara deserts.
Mm-hmm.
Our bodies are very adaptable, and that's why we've survived this far so long and done so well. Genes are not hard-coded. They do change, and it is one of the blessings. And given an environment, we can repair. People say, well, what can we do? You know, what do we do to promote the repairing? Repairing starts with good food and good nutrition. There are wonderful studies out there I invite everybody to go look for on just the simple things like fish oil, cod liver oil. Get the antioxidants way up. There's good studies on using the B vitamins, particularly B6 for the children. B6 helps with getting the neurotransmitters to where they need to be. It's the hands that carry the transmitter to the right receptor. It has to be there, so let's give those kids lots of B6.
Mm-hmm.
Other things are zinc. So we're looking at good multivitamins. We're looking at lots of B6.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at whole foods, and we're looking at leaving out the reds, the yellows, the orange. 33% of the children with ADD respond for a few minutes after taking a red or a yellow or an orange, they get hyper.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do, I am in that group. I don't really like red unless I need 20 minutes of climbing the wall to drive home after working too late in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what red will do. And then afterwards, I'm like, I'm tired.
Well, I'm in that category too. Nobody would ever call me ADHD. However, red Jell-O, and you don't want to see me.
Amen.
It's just not going to work. I don't feel good. Mm-mm. And so it's fortunate that I know about that. I know I can always choose green Jell-O instead of red. And it's a wonderful thing, but it's amazing to me the people who don't know this, who work with children, even children who are difficult or have some sort of diagnoses, and they don't try that first. So that's something always to check out. And red dye and these other synthetic dyes are in many, many, many of the foods that we eat on a daily basis.
Even in the medication. When Ritalin first came on the market, it was a red pill. And they had to change it. They had to move it over to blue. And the Adderall came out as a red. One of the first early versions of Adderall was red. Now it's blue and yellow and white. Or a beige, I think, is a better color. So we're learning. Even Big Pharma has learned to change colors. Other great things we have to look at is the sugar load. Mm-hmm. We respond to the sugars. It just goes right to the brain, and it is like crack. For 20, 40 minutes, we are climbing the walls. I think every mom can see the cases when the children are given the treats by mom-in-law or by grandma or by aunt or uncle or themselves, and the kids are just climbing the walls. And an hour later, they're hit the floor. Mm-hmm. And that's just it. We really have to watch it. We really have to, for an ADHD child, we have to eat very balanced foods. For all the sugar we take in, we should be taking in protein. We have to take in more fats. The fats and proteins will help balance that carbohydrate buzz. And if we work in those arenas of watching the foods we're taking in, we dump the high fructose corn syrups. We throw out the soda waters. They just don't work for them. They pay a high price. And I know it's really hard sell to say, here's your glass of nice, cool, refreshing water. Mother watching the TV ads for the latest fuzzy pop with lots of caffeine amino acids in it. Mm-hmm. It's tough. It's not an easy job, but the rewards are there.
Well, I have decided that I like my fizzy water with fruit juice in it a whole lot better than these chemical pops anyway. And what you're saying is true for everybody. It's just for some people the result is a little more exaggerated.
It's so much more important in this population, but in every population. When I have a woman come in and want to talk to me about, well, Tom, I don't want to take Fosamax anymore because I'm scared of it, but my doctor says my bones are falling apart and I don't want to break a bone and get injured and go down that dark pathway. And I ask them, well, how much soda water are you taking in? And I go, it's okay to drink the Cokes. I just, for every can you drink 10 cans of water. And they just look at me wide-eyed and they go, why? And I go, it has to dilute the acids. For all that acidic drinking you're putting in your body, it's going to leach calcium out of you to offset it so it doesn't destroy the kidneys. Mm-hmm. So the soda waters, unfortunately, and I hope they're not our sponsors this morning.
No.
It's just that is probably one of my biggest words is don't be drinking the soda water if you want to stay healthy.
The phosphates leach the calcium out of your bone.
The phosphates leach the calcium out of your bone to protect the kidney. Mm-hmm. And so it's a chemical reaction I can't overcome with a little pill.
And there's an amazing amount of sugar in those pops.
Oh, Lordy. Oh,
and in everything else we eat, the French fries, the ketchup, and on and on and on. Unless you're cooking yourself, just count on it that there is some sort of sugar.
No, sugar's addictive. It makes our brain feel really good. When the sugar hits our gut, it grabs a neurotransmitter we make there called serotonin. The serotonin goes directly to our brain and brings us peace and calm like we were being wrapped in the arms of our mom. And it just feels good. And that's a powerful drug, sugar is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the arms of Jesus work a lot better. And you know, the good food, on the long run, it really feels better. And it tastes better. Not at first, I grant, because that sugar and that salt just grabs us. But after a while, you're getting to eat real fresh organic oranges, peaches off the tree. You don't want to go back to synthetic food after that.
Mm-hmm. No. As a child walking into the grocery stores and smelling the fresh fruit, it would bombard you. I miss that. I go into the grocery store and I go, which way to the produce aisle? Mm-hmm. Instead of, my nose will take me right to it. Mm-hmm. Eating good does pay off. You know, your body is a temple. Treat it as such. Bring it good nutrition. Bring it good health. Bring it a good environment. When working with families and children, one of the big things I also share with them is not just a pill. It is not just a food. If you're around unhealthy environments, if you're underneath large power lines or on bad soil, or if you're next to the freeway, or if you're drinking the tap water, these are things that you can manage. Mm-hmm. You know, don't sit behind a car that's, you know, pumping out all kinds of noxious chemicals. Pull yourself back a few feet from that car.
We really have a high toxic environment, and we can manage that. That's something we put in the environment, and we can take it out. And TV is something I preach on. The American Academy of Pediatrics has a policy statement that we should never expose a child two or less to our CRT screen. And that means every old television that has a big box behind it. But nobody has pecuniary interest. Nobody's making money from telling you that. But moms need to know that. And probably we should reduce the amount of television viewing for other children.
Mm-hmm. I don't know which group and where it was published. They said for all children under six, it should be less than 2 hours a week of television. Well, I don't know about you. The TV set was my babysitter. Mm-hmm. I won't say the TV caused me to have ADHD. I'll just say that was my babysitter. It was normal. It was accepted. Mm-hmm. Now we are finally disclosing that maybe that rapid changing video screen isn't the best of worlds for a small developing brain.
Right. Well, the programming is 7 seconds. 7 seconds, because that grabs a toddler's attention. But also, who knows about the flicker? And if the pediatricians are willing to wonder about this publicly, then I think the rest of us could think about it. And right now we're sending old CRT screens into the daycares around town. We maybe need to think about this. You know, regular playtime might be much more educative.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have done all of this lifestyle change, then when might it be a good idea for us to look at drugs?
From my personal experience with my goddaughter, if they've adopted the change in food, if we've changed our environment, if we're working in some learning skills and getting some attention to that, and we're still not clicking, and we know inside that we could do better, try an experiment. Try low dosing. Any one of the amphetamines are just as good as the other. Most practitioners are now using more of the time release because we forget to do the second dose. Other practitioners say just the morning dose for school, and that's good enough. The duration of the drug is 2 to 4 hours. So I'm more of a fan of the time releasers. The use them only during the school time. Take that weekends off, all holidays off. And watch. Keep an eye on looking out for side effects of lack of appetite. It does show up. Back the dose down and see if we can get the appetite back. Look for irritability in the evening. That's overdosing. Look for, and I want results. Mm-hmm. I want to come in. I want to see that the grades are going up. I want to see they're paying attention. I want to see that they come home, do their work, and they're not overamped or displaying the classic impulsive, inattentive attitudes. But it's always a challenge to separate that from the normal adolescent childhood development of we are explorers. Mm-hmm. It is all a new bright day when we wake up each day. And so we don't want to medicate it to the point of numbness. Mm-hmm. Because there are some practitioners who are giving some of the anti-anxiety drugs, some of the antidepressants. We're going down and adding in that path. And those I'm not comfortable with. I think that's going to set up a situation that just you'll never get them off of that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Most children walk away from the amphetamine derivatives because they pay too high of a price on their own. They'll start saying, no, I don't want it, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
But when you put a wet towel over top the brain with an antidepressant, the story's changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have to be very cautious of.
Mm-hmm. So judicious monitoring.
Very careful.
And continuing with the discipline, the behavior management, all those other practical things.
Amen. Very much so.
So, a person should see first to? Who should they go talk to first?
The first step is to get educated. The next step is to find a pediatrician or practicing a physician who is aware of all modalities, who will take the time. And in this day and age, it's hard. The doctor's visit is 6 minutes. After that, they've got to leave. Mm-hmm. So you got to come in with your questions prepared. You have to have them written down, and you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right into the questions and answers. You map out a plan. Seek out a nutritionist to help you with the food. Myself available. There's many very fine folks that work in the nutritional pathways to help. So then now we have naturopaths in Austin. We are blessed to have a lot of complementary medicine, or what we call, I like to call, functional medicine practitioners. Those who work in both allopathic, the Western medicines, and the functional medicines, the nutrition, Chinese medicines, energy work, the healings fields. Put them all together. Mm-hmm. Find all the tools of work. We are blessed to have an internet sources with lots and lots of websites available. There is an autistic site. There's tons of them out there. Google it. Go look and get educated.
Good. And we'll put some of those links on our website. Come and check us out at www.greatshalom.org. And please go by the apothecary shop and see Tom. Use his expertise, because it is rare in this world. And fortunately, we are blessed with some folks in Austin, but a compounding pharmacist is pretty rare, and you're going to want to see Tom on that score, and also as a clinical nutritionist, not somebody who's educated and paid off by the big food companies. So we won't go on that rabbit trail, but go see Tom. And next week we're going to have George Swanson, the Green Builder, who can tell you how to literally save your child's life by building better. He's got quite a story, and you're going to want to hear it. And we've got some free offers. If you just email me at info@greatshalom.org, I'll send you a booklet called Claiming Great Shalom, A Parent's Month of Prayers, or another booklet called 20 Blessings for Teachers. You can give that to your child's teacher or use it as a meditation tool yourself. In the meantime, this is Sharon Sarles at the Great Shalom Broadcast, and we're bringing hope and health and healing to children. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom Broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come. The Great Shalom Broadcast is here to bring hope, health, and healing for children and youth by inspiring, informing, equipping parents and educators. For more information on today's program or today's offer, simply log on to thegreatshalom.org or email info@greatshalom.org. Join Sharon Sarles again next Saturday morning at 7:30 a.m. for the Great Shalom Broadcast.